Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Okay, Maysoon, what is the update? Because last week we had a listener write in about Jessica Silverman's new logo and the move to Chinatown.
Yeah.
Previously on Congratulations Pine Tree.
And she wrote in, "Hello, lovely ladies. I heard Jessica Silverman is moving slash has moved to Chinatown, which is concerning, question mark. And then I saw that she updated her font name to commemorate the new face." Okay, so like we're looking at like kind of the logo type of thing.
Yeah.
That just says Jessica Silverman. The listener included an image of this new logo, which is just Jessica Silverman spelled out in all caps.
And it's hovering above an image of the Earth from outer space.
Yes. And so the listener said, "Then I saw the new font and then the context and then thought, is this an updated version of Chopstick font?"
Yeah.
And you said you were going to email the Jessica Silverman gallery.
I did. I went ahead and emailed Jessica Silverman Gallery. There was one person I think Kate and I have been in communication with before, perhaps, and so I was able to find their email. I emailed her just sort of like just generically, "Hey, we noticed you have a new logo. Just curious to know what the design concept was with it." You know, and then it turned into this whole ordeal where like that person forwarded the email to Jessica Silverman and like two or three other directors of the gallery. And I was like, "Oh, this is turning into kind of a big deal." And I got like nervous. I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. I don't know what would have been, you know, because I was just expecting like a quick, "Oh yeah, we like this font because it represents this to us." You know, like it's something basic. But it didn't turn into that. It turned into a whole ordeal where then Jessica and I were trying to figure out a way to like figure out a time to talk on the phone, and then we found a time to talk, and then she had to cancel because she was installing at a collector's house, like all this, that, and the other. And I was like, this is really turning into like a much bigger ordeal than I ever intended it to, which is like of course the case, right? Of course things are going to be bigger than you ever want them to be in some situations.
Yeah, but I gotta say, Maysoon, we really are delivering to our listener who wrote in about it.
I know. Well, I just feel like, you know, it's a pretty harmless question. That was my whole thing. It's like, yeah, okay, they have a new font. We're recognizing it. We want to know a little bit more about it based on our listeners' sort of questioning and feedback from it.
Yeah, so listeners, when you want this kind of hard-hitting journalism, you should give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can also text that number, or you can email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com, or you can tweet us, @PineTreePodcast. Okay, anyway, go on, Maysoon.
So finally, Jessica and I were texting back and forth, and I was like, you know, it's really fine if you just send me an email. And I reminded her again that I was just curious about the sort of the design content or the design concept or intent of the logo. And so finally, so she was like, okay, great, I can email that to you. So she emailed me back yesterday, which was great because it's just in time for the podcast, for us to record the podcast. So I will...
Yes, and today is Sunday, November 29th. So yesterday was...
Saturday,
the 28th.
So I'll just read you her email. So she says, "Hi, Maysoon. Thank you for the opportunity. My answers are below. We looked at every gallery ad in the two main art magazines, Art Forum and Frieze, to confirm that their logos were, for the most part, painfully similar, minimalist designs with no sense of place, either versions of Helvetica or, to a lesser extent, Times New Roman. Uh-huh. They seem to efface any specific identity in order to assume authority and power.
Wow.
We decided that they were all aspiring, consciously or not, to the invisibility of white masculinity.
Whoa.
As a feminist gallery with a diverse roster of artists, we didn't want to play that game. After some research, we decided to work with an amazing graphic designer in LA called Jessica Fleischman. My spouse, Sarah Thornton, who was a scholar in residence in gender and women's studies at UC Berkeley, put together a brief stipulating that we wanted a font that suggested the presence of the hand rather than the machine, one that felt honest, forward-looking, and historically aware, one that wasn't afraid to be gay in the broad, inclusive sense of being both happy and non-heteronormative."
What?
One of our artists, Sadie Barnett, who is an Oakland-based artist and will have a solo show with us in March. We all know Sadie.
Yeah,
she's
Sadie
fucking
Barnett.
Rad. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, says, I feel like the font is like a place you want to go and a place you want to be seen at.
Wow.
Thanks so much for your interest. Feel free to reach out if you have any more questions. So that was the response from the gallerist, Jessica blown. Silverman. And I mean, I feel like there was a lot of thought put into it. I mean, that was way more than I would have expected. So that was interesting to me. And I hope that sort of somewhat satisfies our listeners' question. And then I would say that we also got...
Well, at least to know what they are...
What they were going for.
What they are saying.
I mean,
saying.
As someone who works in a gallery, when you work with a designer, you do give them a sort of brief, like what you're looking for, what you're trying to evoke with the design, whether it be the font or the colors.
What your mission...
Yeah, like with an exhibition, you tell them, you talk to them about the themes, the ideas, and you're hoping the design can, like, bring that, you know, can sort of allude to that for the viewer, the whoever's looking at that.
Sure.
So I mean, that is something you would do, and
right,
I, you know, it was interesting because it's a very full-on description or response, which I really really appreciate.
Nothing about Chinatown.
No.
Nothing about the chopstick font.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I think you know, we got also some really great feedback from...
Yes, let's go to that. Okay, yeah. We also got an email in from Christine Wong Yap, who's a Chinese-American artist who used to be in the Bay Area, but now is in Queens. Yeah, and is an illustrator and graphic designer as
well. So this is definitely like her field. So
I'm just going to read. I'm just going to read her email. So she said, I enjoyed your last episode, and I'm writing in to voice my opinion of the Jessica Silverman logo. The logo does not strike me as the new chopstick font. I think chopstick font, and that's in quotes, emulates Chinese calligraphy and an upright held ink brush that can easily vary line weight. The leg of the R and the middle stem of the E are the only places where it looks a little chopstick-esque. Otherwise, if you take out the tilting slash angle distortion of the letters, it would not have much calligraphic or gestural or hand, that's in quotes, in it. The logo has a lot of contemporary art typography, again in quotes, in it, with the two distinct line weights that generally don't vary and super heavy serifs and terminals. God damn, Christine.
I know. It's like full on. I love that super nerdy analysis. Okay. It's so good.
The distortion slash tilting is playful and also very contemporary art, in quotes. It looks ready for an art book fair, not Portsmouth Square to me.
Portsmouth Square is the sort of main park in Chinatown. It's right off of Kearney. It's off of Kearney. It's like the full, you know, it's the center of Chinatown. Yeah.
And then, okay, back to Christine. She's like, that's just my opinion. In any case, the neighborly and progressive thing to do is to get to know the community, its needs, and steps it could take to serve and participate in the community, not just exploit cheap real estate, and in doing so, at least attempt to mitigate any gentrifying effects it could have. Chinatown is a tight-knit community whose residents are primarily low-income immigrant seniors. Seniors and SROs are especially vulnerable to COVID. The Chinatown economy is hugely driven by tourism and restaurants, so the economic fallout from COVID will be staggering. If your average restaurant operates on razor-thin margins, imagine the margins of mom-and-pop restaurants selling some of the cheapest food you can in San Francisco. So she also, Christine also included some facts from a presentation that Gordon Chin gave, who is the executive director of the Chinatown Community Development Center. So this is just a snapshot of demographics in Chinatown. Today, the median household income in San Francisco Chinatown is $19,950,
wow,
compared with $78,710 citywide. Yeah, that's pretty and shocking. The poverty rate is 28% compared to 13% citywide. 70% of residents are foreign-born compared to 36% citywide. The median age is 50.4 compared with 35 citywide. And 20% have college degrees versus 53% citywide. And then Christine gives a link to a project she did in Chinatown as part of a process to help lay the groundwork for the Chinatown Arts and Culture Coalition, a coalition of local community-based art and cultural organizations, to apply for cultural district designation, which would open more city funding for the neighborhood. And I'll put a link
That's
to
great.
All the links that Christine
yeah,
sent
please
us.
Do.
I'll put them in the underworld. Many of the local CBOs coordinate with other organizations to provide relief to food insecurity, emergency assistance.
And just so you know, a CBO is a community benefit organization, yes. Just FYI.
Yep. Immigration law, etc. Participants in my project spoke repeatedly about a fear of gentrification. If Jessica Silverman would like to connect with the coalition, I'd be happy to make an email invitation. I'd also be happy to refer them to a Chinese translator to make their printed materials language accessible. I could refer them to a local copy shop and vinyl signage vendor so they could keep their dollars in the neighborhood. Okay, so should we forward this to Jessica Silverman?
Yeah, I'd rather her listen to it, and if she had questions, and I would be more than happy to connect her with Christine. And I think keeping your dollars in the neighborhood as a newcomer
makes
a lot
of good,
sense. Like
good practice.
Anyhow, Christine, thank you so much for your email.
Yeah, God bless.
That was really
Christine, full on
so many levels, and I just it was the answer couldn't have been more on point and perfect, honestly. Or the response, I guess.
Yeah. We also talked to a few curators mm-hmm. we know.
And their immediate sort of takes were like comical, jazzy, rhythmic, riffing off the fonts from the 50s and 60s.
With the, in terms
of
the logo.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
So some of that actually resonates with what I think Jessica's email said.
And also thank you to our original listener for writing in. Because to be totally honest, I never would have thought about any of this.
I didn't even realize there was a logo change, to be honest.
I wouldn't have given any thought to any logo. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize. I don't think I'm on Jessica Silverman's mailing list, so I don't think I got any kind of announcement or, you know, I hear things word of mouth mostly, it seems, about that space. But so super interesting. I mean, I was just sort of like I actually really appreciate the opportunity from the listener to like get sort of dig in a little bit and sort of get some information both from like the source and from, you know, trusted people, artists and friends who have opinions about these things. You know, it's kind of a great opportunity for us to sort of pretend like we're journalists.
I think that's good practice too for anybody who has who's like coming into a neighborhood where they don't live to have an art space or have whatever.
I think people are getting more and more comfortable with questioning motives, you know, or questioning just being more curious about why people are doing things or why galleries or directors are doing certain things. And I feel like, you know, if you don't feel comfortable asking that person directly, like, I think Kate and I are here to do that. What do you think, Kate?
Oh, to do what now?
sorry, was that confusing? Like in the case of our listener who was clearly concerned and distressed, I think, in their email, maybe they weren't comfortable enough to reach out to Jessica Silverman directly, but I think that Kate and I are happy to sort of try to get some information for you, you know, so for...
Oh yeah, I don't give a fuck anymore.
For other listeners who have questions about maybe other art spaces or whatever, like, you know, let us know if you have questions that you want us to sort of look into. I'm happy to do that for sure.
Yeah, Maysoon will do it.
I'll do it in my most diplomatic way possible.
Maysoon's really good at just diving into it.
Yeah, I think it's an Aries trait. Oh God.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, Maysoon, what else do we have going on? People have been asking me about what's going on with SFAI.
Yeah, you gave us a little update recently. Can you give the listeners an update?
I don't really have any news. I could put a link in the underworld to the most recent like presentation that got put out by their committee to reimagine SFAI.
What does that mean? Or who's the, can you like, give us an update on like who's on that? Are those students and teachers, faculty, or who's on that committee to reimagine SFAI?
The committee to reimagine SFAI was like, I guess, invited by the board of trustees to kind of just throw everything up in the air and make suggestions to the board. Now, they only can make suggestions to the board. It seems like they don't have any power to actually do anything but talk to the board.
Okay.
It's chaired by three alumni, Tom Laughlin, Karen Topakian, and Chris Williams. Now, Tom graduated from the MFA program not too long ago. I want to say like 2013 or 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he, in a previous life, was a lawyer and also a former board member
mm-hmm. okay.
of SFAI. And then the other members, they have members from all different, like, interested groups. So they have Lindsay White and Cristobal Martinez, who are tenured faculty, Matt Brusso and Jennifer Locke, who were from the adjunct faculty, Anna Suick and Zaina Baraka, who were staff members at SFAI, Kav Humbira and Oscar Lopez, who were former students, or I don't know if even maybe current students. I think former students. And then alumni, Annie Reiniger, Emily Reynolds, and Rye Purvis.
That sounds great. That sounds like a good combo.
I mean, I think it's a great group. If anybody wants to see their most recent presentation that they've given to the public, there's like a PDF that they shared. I'll put a link to that in the Underworld.
Okay, good.
I also know, because I still have access to like my faculty portal and stuff, so I can see like what classes they're offering in the spring and how enrolled they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's almost no adjunct faculty. There's maybe like two or three people from the adjunct faculty that are still actively teaching.
Yeah.
All the other classes are being taught by the tenured faculty. They seem to be enrolled. Like the classes that, there's not many classes listed, but the ones that are listed are, have plenty of students in them. You know, but it's like just a handful, like each set, like painting, like each or whatever, each department has like maybe one or two classes.
Program, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I think they're still doing the teach out because the students that still need, that were very close to graduating, couldn't get all the credits they needed over the summer. It was for some of the students, I think it was a really big workload. And in the middle of a fucking pandemic and everything else going on, I think it just wasn't feasible to cram however many credit hours they had to complete into just the summer. And so it got extended into this school year. And so from what I understand, there still will be classes in the spring. Okay. But I've heard all kinds of conflicting information from different people about how much money they actually have.
Yeah. Gosh, I feel so bad. I really hope they're able to figure something out, personally.
I think they should roll.
Aw. I don't feel that strongly about it. I mean, I don't feel bad about it. You can say
I'll
that.
I'll be cutting that out as well.
You're going to cut that one?
No, I'm not saying.
I just see this in a lot of places where I've worked and where I work currently. Just the... like how you, the transition of like from talking and ideating or whatever, having ideas to action and actually pushing an idea forward. I always worry about like, at what, I don't know, just like, are there people who are working on this that are capable of actually realizing ideas, you know, projects? And I'm sure that there are, but I do sometimes see that there's like a crisis in that way where people talk a lot and then there's not motion, you know, there's not actual work that gets done.
Yeah, well, and especially when like you're in a dire financial crisis,
and it's a huge challenge, obviously
it's hard to like be doing big plans for the big picture when you don't know if you're going to be able to be open for another few months. Well, the lab still has stuff going on Thursday, December 3rd. They're going to have a 40-minute talk.
Oh, good.
Followed by 30 minutes of public debate. And that's broadcast live on thelab.org.
Okay.
So this is part of their series called The Forum.
Yeah.
And the participants this time are going to be New Red Order, or the NRO.
Okay.
Well, they don't say the NRO. I put the.
Okay, that's okay.
A public secret society that works with networks of informants and accomplices to create grounds for indigenous futures. If America is premised both on desires for indigeneity and the violent erasure of indigenous peoples, NRO asks how those desires can be routed into something productive and perhaps even sustainable.
Great.
So NRO contributors Adam Khalil, Zach Khalil, and Jackson Paulus discuss the group's savage philosophies and use of humor, all while reflecting on what it might mean to become an informant. You can initiate your own informancy by calling 1-888-NEW-RED-1.
Got it.
What do you say to that? Or you can visit their website, newredorder.org. So they'll be speaking, and you should tune into that.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that sounds interesting. I mean, obviously with our most recent holiday, you know, I think a lot of people, I certainly was thinking a lot about our fucked up history with the Native community in this country. I mean, I think about it quite a bit, actually, but I just have been getting increasingly more uncomfortable with, like, the idea of Thanksgiving and how fucked up it is and how wrong it is and violent and, just like, how do I dress, like, when you're having your Zoom meeting with your family in the Midwest? And
Katie had her family Zoom, and one of her relatives, when they were asking what she was doing for Thanksgiving, she was like, I honor everyone who is celebrating today, but I will not celebrate a holiday based on genocide.
I love that. That's so great.
You can just say that on your family Zoom.
Yeah, I will say that for sure.
There's also the Shumi land tax that people can contribute to if you're a non-Indigenous person living in Ohlone territory. You can contribute to this land trust.
And what I love about that also is that they have different, I went in and donated a while back, but they have, if you know, there's a questionnaire that you fill out, and if you're a renter, it's a different price than if you're a landowner, like, or if you own a building in San Francisco or in wherever you live in the Bay Area. Which I think is like, yeah.
Yeah, and there's maps to like know what is the like tribal affiliation of the land that you live on.
Listeners, go to sogorate-landtrust.org.
What else is happening, Maysoon?
Are there holiday movies you were watching? You had mentioned a movie recently that you were
Jesus
happiest
Christ.
Season. Is that a holiday movie?
Yes.
I haven't heard about it. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it? Was it so great?
It sucks.
It sucks. Okay.
I hated it. Okay, Maysoon, there is a new lesbian Christmas movie on Netflix with Mackenzie Davis, who is the tall lesbian from that episode of Black Mirror that everyone loved, where there's lesbians meeting after they're dead inside a computer.
That sounds amazing, actually.
Okay, and then Kristen Stewart from Twilight, okay, plays a little short lesbian. And the two lesbians have been dating for a year, but Kristen Stewart hasn't met Mackenzie Davis's family. And so Mackenzie Davis takes Kristen Stewart home for the holidays, for a Christmas holiday, and fucking pops it on her that...
In the car, right, to the house,
her family
right?
doesn't know. Yep, it, at the fucking house.
That's so bad.
That, hey, my family doesn't know I'm gay. They don't know we're dating. I told them you're my roommate and that you're an orphan.
Just, it's just so dumb.
And you just need somewhere to be. And you need somewhere to be for for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But she really is an orphan. So that's a true.
Oh, she is. Okay.
So then they're just keep telling her, like, oh, sorry your family died.
Great, so she gets to be reminded of, like, this painful thing.
Yeah, and the other thing is Kristen Stewart had planned to propose to this tall woman.
Oh. Harper.
And the whole thing is just the fucking Mackenzie Davis is such a fucking unlikable nightmare.
Oh.
Like, doing every rom-com has maybe a character who's, like, kind of a piece of shit, and we're like, wow, this other person really could do better.
Right.
You know, like, and you've got Mail with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks owns, like, a big box bookstore that puts Meg Ryan's mom and pop bookstore out of business, mm-hmm. but somehow they still fall in love.
Yeah.
Or, like, a lot of rom-coms where one of the two love partners are already seeing someone and then they leave the person they're with, like Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks in Sleepless in Seattle, where Meg Ryan is already with Jeff Daniels or whoever.
Yeah.
Not Jeff Daniels. Bill Pullman.
We got it. We get it.
But like one of the biggest criticisms of gay movies is like, why can't there be a story about gay people where their gayness isn't the central
theme,
like driver yeah. of the plot? Like, it's not a coming out story. It's not a hate crime story. It's not overcoming gay bashing. It's not where someone dies or gets murdered. It's just a normal fucking movie.
With gay people.
You know, where someone can live their life and also right. be gay. And not that it has to, like, ignore the fact that they're gay. Like, I think a good example of a fun rom-com is the movie Adam and Steve.
Adam and Steve, okay.
Where it's a rom-com. They're two gay guys. The kind of central kind of conflict is that they met each other in like the 80s or 90s and had a really embarrassing one night stand. And then they re-meet each other in like the present day and fall in love and don't realize that they had this embarrassing one night stand. And then when they do realize that they have to overcome that.
Okay. So it's just, yeah.
So like the fact that they're gay has nothing to do with that conflict.
Yeah. I hear you.
And I mean, but they're still super gay. There's like gay square dancing and there's like, you know, all kinds of gayness in it.
Okay, Rotten Tomatoes gives that a 55%, but that's okay.
It's not a good movie. It's kind of got a lot of gross out humor.
I feel like this is this.
But Parker
this
Posey
is
in
to watch really bad
and
movies.
And Chris Kattan.
So go for it.
Yeah. Or there's another movie that it does have a coming out aspect called Saving Face. That's a really good gay rom-com by a director who lives
Saving
in the
Faith?
Saving Face by a director who lives in the Bay Area named Alice Wu. And she made this movie in 2004. And it's about like two young Chinese American lesbians who I think they're both not out to their family, you know, but this, I don't know. It's just handled better where they're actually really kind to each other. You know, it's not like one person is like bringing the other person home and making them pretend to be a fucking orphan who has nowhere to go for Christmas.
Totally. I think that's a really valid critique of this movie and of maybe of the genre in general. Or
yeah. And the saddest thing to me is that the fucking that Happiest Season is written by Clea DuVall, who is queer, and Mary Holland, who's a hilarious comedian. But I don't think she's, I don't know how she identifies, but I'm pretty sure she's straight. And like the funny parts are really funny. It's got a great cast and it had the potential to be an awesome, very funny lesbian movie. But because the like painful, it's so painful what Kristen Stewart is going through. And she's not a comedic actor, really. You know, like if that role was played by like Kate McKinnon or someone who's funny, I think they could have taken some of the cutting edge out of it, you know, because if you have, if you are a gay person and you've ever been in that situation, and I have been in that situation where I was dating someone and I had to pretend that we were just friends in front of their family, like that situation fucking blows. And I feel like most rom-coms if don't have that kind of that level of kind of fucked upness to them. Like if someone's a dick to the other person, it's usually they're just like not grown up, like and knocked up, you know, or like,
I mean, just in general is like a terrible, it's just a, it's abusive, I guess, you know, it's like, it's a terrible, it was a terrible idea for her to even invite
it
her.
Just really felt that way because there were plenty of points where it, she could have took some of the edge off of that that character played by the tall woman. Dan Levy is very funny in it.
I love him. I really love him.
But he also has this whole speech where he's like, the whole time he's telling Kristen Stewart to get out of there, and then he comes and rescues her because she can't even fucking leave because it would be like a $1,000 Lyft ride.
Oh my God. Yeah.
To get out of there. And so he comes to get her, but then he gives her this fucking like sanctimonious speech about how, oh, you have to be patient for everyone to come out to their family because it's so scary.
Yeah, but she shouldn't be dragged into the middle of that. She should just be allowed to be
They're 30 years old.
Like, let her stay home.
They're 30.
Yeah.
Watch Saving Face.
Oh, yeah.
Or Adam and Steve. There's another shitty British lesbian rom-com called Imagine Me and You that also is, none of these movies are like Oscar worthy.
Yeah, but it's great. This is the time. This is the time of the year to watch the shittiest, crappiest movies out there that are entertaining. Yeah.
I think Saving Face probably has the best Rotten Tomatoes score of all those.
Okay. This one actually got, this one, Happiest Season, which is a terrible fucking name, was 84% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't know. I'm just so mad at it because I'm like, okay, if you made that movie in like 2003, you know, maybe it would have, maybe I wouldn't be so pissed because
it was a different time in 2003. You know? Yeah.
But it's like, how do you miss the discourse that gay people are tired of the tragedy of every movie being that the character is gay? Like, why does that have to be the conflict?
Thank you, Kate.
Why does every gay character have to suffer for their gayness? Yeah. I think, I mean, I'm, I think that's kind of like also goes for many marginalized groups and identities in like popular culture, right? Like, why can't there be movies about black people where they're just living their normal life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not like in some stereotype hell.
Yeah, exactly.
There just seems to be more like true representation. Yeah.
Stories by people, by gay people and black people and trans people and indigenous people writing their own stories, and that, you know, we shouldn't just get one lesbian rom-com every 60 years.
Well, there was some like critique that maybe it was written in one way, but it had to be changed, you know, to appeal to like the larger masses of people. Do you think there's any truth behind that or any?
Look at the bizarre shit Netflix puts out. They put out some pretty neat shit. Dude, I tried to
watch a Dolly Parton holiday. Did you watch a Dolly Parton holiday musical?
Is there a new one?
It's really bad. No, it's on Netflix. It's just, I think it's new.
Is it
new?
The one where it's about Dolly Parton being a little girl growing up in the Smoky Mountains, and then real Dolly Parton comes and is like a guardian angel?
No, I think this one's actually new, and it was so bad.
I think
bad.
Dolly Parton puts out a new Christmas special every year.
It was so bad, I just couldn't watch past like the first 5 minutes. I was weak.
Okay, don't talk bad about Dolly Parton, though.
No, I love Dolly Parton. It's not, I have nothing against her. It's just that this movie
get calls
was
in.
Really cheesy.
Hey, Kala's got some classes up. Hey there, so you can see the show that they have up online. It's called Dissonant Matter. It is a two-person exhibition by Guillermo Galindo and Ozma Cosmi. It focuses on tales of migration from non-human perspectives.
Okay.
So you can check that out at Kala, that's KALA.org.
Ozma does work in VR, so she creates these really interesting worlds using VR.
Yeah, it's the year of the digital artist right now.
Yeah.
What's Root Division got going on? Hey, there's a digital illustration workshop for holiday card making on December 7th.
Oh, sweet. That's sweet.
On December 1st, 8th, and 15th, there's virtual figure drawing with Courtney Griffith.
Wow, cool. That sounds kind
of
cool.
They have a whole bunch of different stuff going on, and you can check it all out at rootdivision.org/studio-art-4-adults.
Wow, long. Okay. Or you can just go to their website and just go to classes, and you'll find it right there.
Rootdivision.org. Okay. Well, I want to give a big hug to all our listeners through their earbuds or whatever. And if you need anything, feel free to reach out to us. Congratulations, my tree.
Yeah.
And we love you, and we dream of you as we're going from the bridge
to the other bridge,
to the island in between. This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.